On Mother's Day, our former intern minister, Ruth Reinhardt, graciously invited us to bust out of the binary, using the genderbread man to share the most latest understandings of the biological determinants of gender and sexual orientation. How many of you were there for that, people? And if you weren't, I really invite you to listen to it on our website. It's just a very eye-opening and helpful understanding of how gender works, what we're learning about gender. So today on Father's Day, we're picking up where she left off, but with a focus about how binary gender roles and the archetypes connected to them specifically have impacted men and therefore all of us. It's fitting that today is also Gay Pride Day, a day of celebration of difference in sexual orientation and gender identity. And I'm grateful to have Mark and Strider joining me in worship leadership today, each experiencing fatherhood in their own ways. So what male archetypes come to mind for you? Spend a little moment thinking about, male and what arises. In the 1990s, using the work of Carl Jung, Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette identified four archetypes of what they called the mature masculine in a book entitled The King, the Warrior, the Magician, and the Lover. Those are the four. So the king brings with him the energy of law and order, not only codifying what needs to be done, but creating a just and creative ordering, embodying that right order. It's been translated into the Christian logos, the Hindu Dharma, the Chinese Tao. In mythology and traditional theology, the king is a male godhead, the central stereotype, often seated at the center of the world. Images abound of this king god on top of a hill, at the center of it all, bestowing orders. From Yahweh's message to Moses on the mountaintop to the Father God on the mountaintop that gives black elk a series of revelations for his people. But this king also has an important secondary function, that of bestowing blessing and fertility. The male Jewish, Christian, and Muslim monotheistic God, was considered responsible for creation but never seen in partnership. Likewise, in ancient Egyptian mythology, the male sun god Aton was responsible for putting the Nile in Egypt to ensure that the land would be fertile for generations to come. And by the way, happy solstice to everybody. We are in that sun god time. The warrior archetype is much maligned in our culture. And I have to admit, I have a hard time myself with this one. It represents that assertive, aggressive energy that gets things done. The ends sometimes justify the means with this energy. Often experienced as an energy of destruction, warrior energy also arouses, motivates, and energizes. It's the energy of the samurai do, always ready, trained, alert, and discerning. There's a discipline to mature warrior energy, with both inner and outer emphasis on control. The mature warrior destroys only that which needs to be destroyed so that something new can emerge. The magician in these archetypes is the knower of special knowledge and the master of technology. In ancient cultures, these people were the shaman, the medicine men, the wizards and the doctors, the advisors to the kings. We can extend that magical purview to all knowledge that takes special knowledge to attain. Doctors, lawyers, techies, and the like in our day. With secret knowledge comes power. It was the magicians along the Tigris and Euphrates River and along the Nile who created the civilizations as we know, as we begin to talk about civilization. They invented some of the secrets of language, and developed mathematics, astronomy, and law, and astrology. Magical energy is the archetype of awareness, and insight. Magicians only use the vastness of knowledge for the good of others. They might be equivalent to today's cultural creatives. The lover is connected, the fourth of the archetypes, is connected with vividness, aliveness, and passion. The lover is sensual, engaged with life physically through a love of nature, sex, food, touch, and smells, and connected to the world empathically. The lover archetype is not only about the sexual side of life, but about the entire experience of life. This means that while the lover creates joy and pleasure, the lover archetype also does not shy away from pain. Within the lover, we are all interconnected. In their body of work, taken from Jung, Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette remind us that no one man can embody these four archetypes. One is always dominant. Yet in what they call the mature masculine, the archetypes dance together. But they also bemoan the fact that we do so little to enable our boys to connect with all four of these archetypes as they're growing up in a balanced way. Now, similar work begun by Carl Jung's wife, Emma Jung, and expanded upon by others as well, identified four feminine archetypes: the queen, the mother, the wise woman, and the lover. So I'm going to put those aside because it's Father's Day. So Jung and others took our binary gender roles and developed quaternities beneath them. Apparently, Jung was really fascinated with the number four. So he took our binary thing and created fours underneath them. Jungians believe that these archetypes are valuable because they furnish us with a shortcut, an intuitive way to grasp an essential group of attributes. And in this case, these are engendered group attributes that connect directly with the unconscious mind and are instantly recognized, even transculturally. These archetypes are emotional and spiritual pictures that we have that have an immediate impact on people and groups. But how well do they work today? I'm guessing that many of you can easily relate to at least some of the archetypes mentioned, especially if you look back on your childhood. But where does a trans youth fit? And where do gender fluid people fit? Those who shy away from any engendered identity. One of my neighbors wears a blue bracelet when he wants to be referred to with male pronouns, a pink one when she feels more feminine, and a yellow one for those in-between days. And how have these archetypes limited our concepts of fathering and therefore of mothering? I grew up in the 1970s and 80s in a traditional father knows best American household, but with an Italian accent. My dad, all warrior, protecting us from outside forces and providing for us. My mom, the queen, gentler, but she still held solid to her responsibility for our safety, our well-being, and formation within our house. There was very little room for either of my parents to develop other parts of themselves, and my two brothers and I were raised to conform to these archetypes. While Jungians have traditionally invited a balance between animus male energy and anima female energy, our culture is quickly rejecting any of these binary boxes, especially when it comes to gender and sexuality. My generation, and especially the generation that follows me, is moving quickly out of the binary. It's scary and exciting, confusing and freeing. What a time we're living in. The dance between archetypes within gender roles that Moore and Gillette were asking of us is quickly inviting us to dance wholeheartedly between and among gender roles. In college, I busted out a little bit and played with gender bending. Although identifying as straight, I invited my girlfriend, Lisa Hollis, to be my date at a sorority dance, dressed fully as a man. And I returned the favor for her a few months later. We had a blast playing with gender in the 1980s. It was scandalicious. But that's about as scandalous as it got in my 1980s East Coast world, where we only used the word gay in hushed tones, and the authentic trans world lay deeply shadowed in our lives. We now live in a world where engendered pronouns are being replaced by they, them, and theirs, as our language seeks to update itself from the binary constraints that we've had. Parenting has shifted significantly as well, with a marked increase in two-income families and stay-at-home dads. It's almost doubled since the 1970s. And as I was exploring adoption, not only did I learn that I could breastfeed an adopted child, but which I didn't try and wish I had, but I learned that men can breastfeed as well, with lots of support and a little medical intervention. It's really an open field out there right now. Scientific evolution invites us more and invites scientific evolution invites more and more complexity into creation. And cultural evolution is luring the human species into more and more freedom. Perhaps it's time then to update our stories about ourselves and create new narratives that more fully embrace the complexity of human life. Perhaps it's time that our archetypes as well bust out of the binary and become more inclusive of what really is the fullness of life, inviting each of us to search more and more for our true identities and to express them, and inviting each of us to learn to honor and celebrate the identities of others. Scary and exciting, confusing and deeply liberating. I can't conclude today's sermon today without noting how far we still have to go. It came to light this week that Omar Mateen, the man responsible for the 49 deaths in the gay bar in Orlando, most likely had conflicting feelings about his own sexuality. Apparently, he'd visited the Pulse regularly over a 3-year period and had used the dating app Grindr to maintain an on-again, off-again texting relationship with someone he'd met there. On this day, the intersection of Gay Pride and Father's Day, a day when we were talking about breaking out of the binary, I cannot help but wonder how our still narrowly defined roles of masculinity and sexuality may have impacted his troubled soul. And I pray for the day that the freedom that is breaking forth now continues to expand and allow each of us to express ourselves in the most powerful and beautiful way we can, so that it may be a source of inspiration and joy to us all. As I wrote in a letter to the congregation yesterday, I'm finding myself more and more in need of silence during these times. So again, I invite us to pause for some silence.